So I'm Piers Corbin. I'm the director of weatheraction.com, which was formerly quoted on the stock exchange, and now we're delisted, but that doesn't matter. We are a long-range weather forecasting company and sell forecasts to a wide range of people, largely farmers, but also anyone who's involved in risk-taking involving the weather, such as energy traders and commodity traders and so forth.
Now we've just had an announcement about the climate that we now know for sure that, most definitely the world has been warming. That there, people like you like to cast doubt on this, though, Piers.
Yes, it is absolute total lies. They achieve these lies by two ways. One is they selectively choose extra warm places which don't have long data sets with them for the current records. The other thing is, and this is their main lie, is they changed temperature data in the past. And this has been done on an industrial scale for the last 20 years, actually longer than that. If you look on our website, you can go, or Twitter feed, you can find out about this. They just adjust the past temperatures. So they're comparing now with something in the past which they've made to look colder. It is utterly monstrous. Now, you can get the previous data sets as well. They don't actually rub them all out. So you can get the data set they had for the past, which they issued, say, 10 years ago for the previous 50 years, you know. But then if you look at that data set, same period now, it will have been changed, but it will be labeled some new set, you know.
Yeah, well, that's easy to say, but can you prove it?
Yes, because they admit they issue the data, and we have a graph of this, which we frequently do circulate, and it shows successive data sets and how they successively change the past to cooler. So the last time we analysed this, the typical difference, i.e., relative extra temperatures to the past added, was at least half a degree. And that was for central England temperatures, which is the one they quote all the time. By now, it's probably 1 degree. So anything you see, and it's probably also adjusted worldwide, you need to knock off 1 degree. They don't hide this fact. They say they have adjusted them. They say they're adjusted. They don't explain how they're adjusted, but they go waffling on about reliability of data sets. In the 1990s as well, they axed about one third of the world's weather stations. These are ones which, for various local reasons, were not showing warming. Because obviously, in a on a world scale, there's going to be some places which are warming and some which are cooling for various reasons to do with local circulation and so on, and the weather patterns changing over periods of well, decades and centuries.
Well, no,
So they just axed the ones they didn't want.
there's quite a big organisation I know you're a big fan of, Piers, called the World Economic Forum meeting this weekend. I love the way, I don't know if you're going to be able to do a protest. I think you probably better have some very warm clothing, maybe some skis, maybe
Yes.
a snowmobile, because they do this, don't they? First of
Oh, in Davos,
all,
yes.
in Switzerland, which is a highly dodgy country, which you can imagine sitting there as Adolf Hitler was preparing his coup. Rubbing
Well,
your
yeah.
hands and watching the money roll in, because actually the
Indeed.
Second World War swirled around Switzerland without
Oh,
touching
completely.
it, incredibly. But anyway, that's where they are, the World Economic Forum, this weekend. Now, one of the things that they've released beforehand is looking at what they call their Global Risks Report.
Right.
And quickly moving up the
Yeah.
scale is, there's things like cyber terrorism. At the moment, what they're saying for 2023 is the energy crisis is number one, the cost of living, rising inflation, food crisis, and cyber attack. That's what they're talking about for 2023. If we move along to 2024, 2025, in a couple of years' time. The cost of living is still there. Natural disasters apparently are going to be increasing. Geopolitical conflict. Number four is climate change. And number five is social unrest. I would have thought social unrest might be quite near the top. But the most interesting, in a way, is their forecast for 2033. The number one risk, they say, is the failure to decarbonize. The number two risk is the failure to adapt to climate change. And number three, there is extreme weather. Biodiversity loss, they talk about, and large-scale forced migration. Well, they're painting a picture of a totally chaotic planet by 2033. What do you make of these people at the World Economic Forum, and can we trust their risks?
No. Well, they are evil. They have an agenda which is different from serving humanity. It's about destroying humanity, world depopulation, and so forth. I think very specifically, it's interesting.
They're actually warning about this. They're saying, actually, look, you know, we're going to be looking at large-scale forced migration. This is forced migration, which means...
Well, they're starting wars everywhere and killing people by the forced injections, or the brainwashing, promoted injections, let's call them.
Yeah, so one of the things that's quite clear after 2030, which is going shooting up the list, is this failure to decarbonise.
I think we should look at that more closely. You see, we know from our long-range forecast and changes of solar activity that the period 2030 to 2035 will be extraordinarily cold in temperate zones, and that is because of changing solar activity and its lunar modulation. Now, they probably know this because they know our forecasts work and their own forecasts don't work. So they prepare everything knowing what is going to happen. So to talk simultaneously about runaway warming or whatever is insane. I mean, for a start, of course, the CO2 doesn't control climate. It's the other way around. But there will be catastrophes then, but they'll be caused by a cold world. There will be food shortages because of the reduction of growing zones. And we already have the reduction of wheat growing in North America, for example. The failure to combat CO2, well, I would want more CO2, not less. The reason why they talk about this now, I think, is to brainwash people into thinking that CO2 is a vital thing to reduce. And that enables them to implement all sorts of controls. And I think this stuff right now about zoning cities, although it's not immediate, they're talking about it a lot, and they say it's to save the planet. Well, really, it's an excuse for having an ideological attack on everybody to get them ready to accept any measures in the name of saving the planet for CO2, which will be all sorts of lockdowns, of course, and energy crises and so on, all of which have been deliberately created by them.
Some people are saying, well, actually, the power of government is almost nil at the moment. And actually, the World Economic Forum, representing the West, are really ruling the rules. They do certainly seem to be setting policy. Yes. And one of their, probably their main person, just happens to be, even though he's not supposed to be political, our head of state, King Charles.
Yes, that is interesting. Now, then that is very interesting because, you see, there's questions to be asked about Harry and Meghan and this book. Because, you see, look, this book would not get out. I mean, apart from the fact that a lot of it is lies, I've heard reliably from people, but who cares? This book would not get out unless the World Economic Forum wanted it to get out. It undermines royalty, which is kind of curious because Prince Charles is so important. But you see, you can imagine a scenario where our whole government structure in the United Kingdom, including head of state being the king, will be undermined and destroyed, and then a new rule, a new world order, can come upon us based on the World Economic Forum. And of course, King Charles might then have some special role in that anyway, as a special advisor. You know, who knows? But something different. And you see, I think you've got to think about this Harry Meghan book. It can't be just an accident but it's allowed to happen now. It really can't.
One of the interesting things about the book, although, you know, it might be that he's just now established himself in the United States, and they've gone through various stages doing filmed interviews with Megan Fur.
It's a big Hollywood thing. But look, Hollywood is part of World Economic Forum. All these things spreading these ideas, these dystopian nonsense for climate.
Well, what I'm saying is maybe the timing is just that this is now, I mean, Megan did her thing last year. Maybe this is now Harry doing his. Anyway, he does seem quite confident in front of the interviewers, and he's raising some pretty awkward questions, one of which is this idea that maybe the war in Afghanistan was a kind of game that was being played. I mean, I think that was...
Well, it was a game, of course,
And also, of course, raising questions about the death of his mother.
Yeah, yeah. Well, indeed. Yes, that's right. But I don't believe he's on the side of the people. But, of course, it is interesting. You see, these people let's say he's a controlled opposition, you could say. I mean, he's raising stuff to look as if he's on our side. But, of course, you know, the idea of him and her being on our side in the long run is a nonsense. But it is very interesting, very interesting. It's not just a little kind of a home movie, trouble at home sort of thing. It's much bigger than that, I'm sure.
What about the wider movement? Because we've also seen an amazing speech by Andrew Bridgen, Leicester MP, Tory MP, before
Christmas.
And now his statement that the COVID vaccines were the worst crime since the... Well, I'm not sure exactly his words, but he was talking about them, you know, being some sort of... crime against humanity, the next one, or the biggest one since the Holocaust.
He was quoting a leading cardiologist, and he said the leading cardiologist said to him that this is the biggest crime against humanity since the Holocaust. Now, it was properly chosen words, and if you look at the words, there's no way in which he was undermining the importance of the Holocaust. Completely no way. He was using the Holocaust as, if you like, a sort of standard reference of something really, 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 really evil. But he did not undermine the Holocaust. So to describe it as anti-Semitic is actually completely insane. And another thing that distresses me is not a single member of parliament stood up in front of Sunak and said, look, you're making these claims. Where's your evidence? Because Andrew did not say anything anti-Semitic. Why are you making these claims? But nobody, not even my brother, stood up. And he's been hammered with the anti-Semitic lie. Look, the anti-Semitic lie is there. They turn it on when they haven't got anything else to say and to corral the stupid and the compliant and the people on the make into line. And that's what's happened in Parliament just now. And we've got to support Andrew Bridgen. You know, we got to send him messages of support, demand that Sunak retract everything, demand that he's reinstated properly, and demand the government end the jab programs. Because if anything's to be done, you know, that would be the best way of remembering what Andrew Bridgen probably has given up his political career for. You know, I don't know. Let's see what happens. It's going to be a long story, this, but I would urge people, you know, forget this sort of claim. Oh, right-wing Tory. It's all just nonsense. I mean, I've met Andrew Bridgen, as a number of us, you know, because you meet anybody to fight for the truth. And that's what we've got to do.
I mean, it would be interesting to see if there's a recall vote and his Leicester constituents vote him back in as an independent. It'd be interesting if there is. But anyway.
If he did, I'd go up there and support him. Even though he might be, I don't class anybody as far right or far left anyway. These labels are just stupid to keep us in the circus of, are Tories marginally better than Labour here or there? No, they are equally, they might as well be the same party. Equal agents of the World Economic Forum trying to commit suicide for themselves to have themselves replaced. And various individuals in there probably imagine they're going to be saved, but of course they won't be, or most of them won't be.
Look, finally,
you mentioned these
zones in cities like Bath and Oxford. Can you just explain? Because I know you've been doing some campaigning around that in the last few weeks. What is going on?
Yes, well, we set up a national united front against zoning controls to unite all these different zoning games. The simplest one is low traffic neighbourhoods, where they block off one road or another, or make people pay to go through a road unless they've got a special pass and stuff like that. And that is, again, they say, to save the planet. Now, all it is controlling people, making them pay money, and actually destroying small businesses, which is their long-term plan to replace them by mega corporations. So that's low traffic neighborhoods. Next one up, we have these 15-minute zones, which are everyone wants or should have the ability to buy basic things within 15 minutes of where they live. However, you see, to achieve this, you say, well, okay, we just got to make more corner shops, and the council ought to help corner shops develop instead of, you know, putting great impositions on them and so forth. But they don't do that. They say, no, we're going to divide up the town into this or that, all these zones, and you're not allowed to go from one to the other, except more than twice a week in your car. Otherwise, you've got to walk, and so on. So it's anti-car, anti-family, anti-freedom. And, of course, this and the other one require massive surveillance. And the third one also requires even more massive surveillance, namely the ultra-low emission zone in London, or the CAZs in other cities, which are called clean air zones. And those require total monitoring of traffic and large charges. And they all have the same aim, is control, 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 money, money, money. Now, personally, I've been driving in the ULEZ in London without paying any attention, and they sent me a bill now for £34,000, which is a charge on a charge on a charge, and so they go on. I'm not going to pay. Our understanding of it, and we've been digging deeply, is the whole structure is illegal. And we know in Birmingham that the council's giving up collecting. Too many people in Birmingham are just driving and not paying. We can do the same in London. We are doing the same in London. Six London boroughs now oppose the extension of ULEZ to the M25. I think this is the end of Sadiq Khan. And tomorrow, Friday the 13th, we have a timely demonstration at his TfL offices by Southwark Tube Station starting at 11:30. So anyone listening, please do come along.
I mean, this news from Birmingham is fascinating to me, because I can remember the putting up the fares in London under Ken Livingstone, which actually wasn't done by him. It was done by the Thatcher government.
Bromley Council. Council imposed it in the High Court.
And then, that's right. And there was a can't pay, won't pay campaign. Well, this
I was part of that and arrested at the time.
This anti-ULEZ campaign, Piers, I mean, it seems to have parallels, doesn't it?
It is. Well, I set it up along with others. That's why we called it ULEZ Can't Pay, Won't Pay. That's specifically to embarrass creeps and liars like John McDonnell, who were supporting us in the 80s in our Can't Pay, Won't Pay. But now, of course, he's completely on the other side. I think, frankly, John McDonnell always was on the other side. And I think he's an extension of the World Economic Forum.
When you say on the other side, I mean, surely people do sometimes swap sides, don't they?
Yes, fair enough, they do. But you see, he's always supported the European Union, even though his voters in Hayes and Harlington do not support the European Union. And to me, the European Union was just a precursor to World Economic Forum dictates, the sort of trial run of them, the sort of kind of mini world state, you know.
Well, I mean, there is this fact. I mean, it's interesting, McDonnell and other people, they seem to have risen up through the Labour Party ranks based on whether or not they oppose the sort of Tony Bennite anti-European. So it's almost even if you're left-wing, you can still rise up through the Labour ranks so long as you're anti Sorry, so long as you're pro-Brussels.
Yeah, pro-Brussels and anti-Brexit, yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, look, just looking this week, as I have been, at this document called the Europäische Wirtschaftsgemeinschaft, which was published by Walter Funk, who was the 1942 Nazi Minister of Economics in Berlin. Yeah. I mean, basically, what he spells out there is something called the European Economic Community, translated into German, is Europäische Wirtschaftsgemeinschaft. And although it was circulated within the Nazi Party at the time to some industrialists, it certainly wasn't known about amongst the public.
No.
But isn't it interesting how we're basically living through what is effectively, you know, many would argue, and I would too, a Nazi project born in 1952 in the middle of the Second World War.
Yeah. No, I agree with that completely. And the follow-on document or secret agreement was between France and Germany to deindustrialize the United Kingdom. And the activities of the European Union have been systematically to do that. I mean, all of the industry of Northeast England has been thrown away and moved to largely to India. And we've paid for it to be moved, all in the name of saving the planet. But no, it's the same amount of carbon dioxide produced. It's just produced in India instead of in the northeast of England. I mean, it is complete nonsense. So, and that's done under the European Union Emission Trading Scheme.
Wonderful. Well, anyway, look, finally, Piers, I think all of this stuff needs to be based on facts, on graphs, on stuff which you can trace back to source data. For anybody that's thinking to themselves, hang on a minute, you know, I know people who still believe in this whole global warming. We must, unless we act now, the planet is going down the tube. Maybe they're watching the World Economic Forum and thinking, well, these guys don't look too democratically elected to me, but they seem to be doing a noble project to stop the extinction of species and the planet. Whereabouts would you point them to actually get some facts on global warming, and particularly on this whole idea of decarbonisation, which the World Economic Forum seems so big on?
Yes. Yeah, you could come to our weatheraction.com website, and you can download a scientific paper there by me and Philip Foster called Man-Made Climate Change Doesn't Exist. And that contains many graphs, many useful graphs. In addition, you can find other graphs on weatheraction.com or on stopnewnormal.net, where you can download various leaflets, including the ones I mentioned, whereby it's you can see clearly that carbon dioxide levels follow changes in temperature, not the other way around. So what they say is back to front. And you can also see the various data sets plotted one above the other to show they have changed them systematically over the last 30 years to make the past colder compared with the present. And those are that's one of the main mechanisms for this fraud. And I repeat, it is fraud. I know people involved in it who, when they're faced with an argument, run away. I mean, I was in the Russian Academy of Sciences in 2004 and going through all the stuff. But I said, look, what you're saying here is nonsense. And he said, oh, that's what we teach in schools in England. I said, yes, but this is the Russian Academy of Sciences. And then he ran off because he knew he was talking bollocks, but wasn't prepared to discuss it.
Well, they're often not, are they? Anyway, look, can you just remind us of your websites where we can get hold of that, good factually backed information?
Absolutely. It's all referenced. Weatheraction.com for the science papers and stopnewnormal.net, and also lettheuklive.com. And often in Telegram, I can be found Piers_Corbyn_stopnewnormal. I know there's a lot of references here. And my Twitter feed at real Piers Corbyn. I have to be called that because Elon Musk has not reinstated my original Piers_Corbyn account. So I'm at real Piers Corbyn now.
Okay, Piers Corbyn, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, as always.